I just remember like putting in my on Facebook or something, I just want to help someone. Like, I'm having a rough week and I just want to do something for someone else. Does anyone know of someone in need? I just want to do something good. And my inbox got flooded with a bunch of things. And I remember my friend Amy Celesi said, there's this couple that I know. I don't know how she knew them, but their 2-year-old daughter had a brain tumor and was in the hospital. I think it was cancer. And I was just sobbing. And I was like, okay, I'm going to do something for this family. They were like a young couple. And I randomly, anonymously went and dropped something. I played Ding Dong Ditch and did something. And I just remember sobbing in my car, watching them come outside and pick up this box of cupcakes that I had left for them. And it made me feel better. Like, just to know that I did something for someone else shifted away from, you know, the shitstorm that I was in. Welcome to the Push Podcast. Why push? Because a nudge is just too friendly. I'm Janelle.
And I'm Eddie. And we're the Copelands.
We are entrepreneurs, parents, business and life coaches.
Lifelong learners and so much more.
On this podcast, we share some of our best and worst experiences.
From raising kids to building businesses or having a career you always dreamt of. We tackle it all.
And all the funny moments in between. Look, life can be a challenge and sometimes you just need the right friends to help you push through.
Pushing you to the right mindset and perspective that shifts life in your favor.
So if you're like us and you're always looking to grow, laugh, and dream big, this is the place for you.
So get ready to be pushed. What up and welcome to the Push Podcast. I am your co-host, Edward Copeland, and I'm here with the other co-host, Janelle Copeland.
Did you just hijack my intro?
Yeah, you didn't say nothing, and I had to step in and... You know, and do what I do.
Well, we're recording in the living room today. So if you're watching on YouTube, it's a different setup.
A little different vibe.
We stepped out of the office. And so we're having a nice little cozy conversation on our sofa. And today we're just going to have a quick conversation about emotions.
Emotions. I don't even know the song.
Emotions
that.
Make me cry sometimes. That's H-Town.
Well, you know, this, I was, so we were talking about it and it's interesting. I was having a conversation with someone the other day and they were going through a tough time, okay, as many of us have gone through tough times before. And
that's the truth.
And in having the conversation, a couple things came up. Number one is that, you know, this person is having this, you know, dynamic of problems at the job and then problems at home, okay, right, in their personal life, and you know, and unsure how to show up in, you know, at work,
which has happened to all of us.
Yeah, 100%. And I think that, you know, that what was interesting about the conversation was that my personality, your personality, very similar, where we go through certain things and you want, let's just solve it. Let's find a solution for it.
Well, can I ask a quick question?
Yeah.
I'm raising my hand.
Yeah.
Do you think it's possible to leave your problems at home and go to work and just focus on work?
No.
You don't?
Mm-mm.
Oh, I would have bet $1 million that you said yes, because you're really good at compartmentalizing.
Yeah. I mean, I think most people cannot. I think some people can. Mm-hmm. Doesn't make them better or anything. It just makes them different. But it just depends on the situation.
Well, I mean, you hear that a lot where, I mean, I obviously am an entrepreneur. I have employees and, you know, I've definitely said that many times. Like, we all have issues, things we're going through, challenges at home, in your personal life, et cetera. And when you come to work, I need you to leave that stuff at the door. I need you to just take it as a break. Use this opportunity to just leave those problems, because they will be there when you come back to them. Right.
Right.
So come to work, interact with your coworkers. Like, let's focus on doing a good job while we're here together for this short time. And I'm just going to ask that you try to do that. Right. And I think that you have to try to encourage your employees to do that, because I think that it's all about perspective, right? And sometimes it's a good idea to compartmentalize and say, well, I can't do anything about the insurmountable bills or the financial problems that I have, right now, mm-hmm. I just have to focus on doing a good job at work, right? I can't do anything about the fact that I'm in an argument with my husband over something XYZ. That doesn't really impact my ability to, you know, focus on doing a good job at my desk, at my computer for the next 8 hours.
Yeah. Right. So just as a clarifying question, like, you're not, are you saying that you want people to put away those emotions and show up their best self?
Well, I'm saying that sometimes it's a good thing to try to do because mm-hmm. I think perspective is key, right? And so sometimes if you are one of those types of people that wear your emotions, like, oh my God, you're going through something and you just can't turn it off.
Right.
I think sometimes you need a good mentor or a boss that can say, that can give you an alternative way to look at it. Hey, yeah. Those same problems, they're going to be home when you get home. So maybe for the next 7-8 hours, like, let's just try to focus on having a good day today.
Right.
Like, let's buy some lunch. Like, let's turn on some good music at work. I'm thinking about the environment that we tried to create in the bakery. Right. Yeah. And so obviously that's different if you're front facing or customer facing and you've got to deliver great customer service or something and your marriage is in shambles or your kids making you crazy or something, it's difficult in different jobs to compartmentalize.
Yeah.
But what I'm trying to say is in some cases, it is something that maybe people don't consider. Like the same problems will be there. So maybe I just shift focus. Like I can try to do that, right? I'm not right. saying it works all the time, but I'm saying sometimes it can still be a tactic.
Yeah, because I agree with that because I think you think about the consequences of not doing that well.
Mm-hmm.
And the consequences are pretty great. Like if you can't find a way to compartmentalize to some extent and you're sitting there at work for, let's just say, weeks on end.
Right.
One, you play a huge, every person in a job, in a business plays a huge part in the environment.
Mm-hmm.
And if any person that is having an issue walks into that environment, they are now creating energy in that environment that may not be positive, right? So you impact your coworkers, your peers, everyone in the business, not to mention customers.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one thing. The other piece is like, if you can't manage that, then your overall performance is probably not your best. You're not going to like yeah. perform at your best at work. And
then maybe your job's in jeopardy.
Now, yeah. And yeah. so now this situation that may be personal outside of work has now deteriorated your work experience mm-hmm. and now put you in a situation where you may have bigger problems because right. maybe you now you're in the hot seat at your job.
So you initially said, no, you can't compartmentalize. You can't separate. And right. I think that obviously, not all problems are created equal,
right.
and not all jobs allow you to compartmentalize.
Right.
And so there's a huge gray area there. But I do think that it's worth, reminding our listeners that in all situations, like really this situation that you're going through, it's about perspective. Mm-hmm. We've had some really awful things happen to us. And I think humor gets us through a lot of deep, dark times.
Right.
And it's not always something to laugh at, but I think at some point we try to find the humor in those things just to kind of push through. Sometimes it's like, is this God's way of like joking with us? Because right. this can't possibly continue to happen to us, right?
Yeah. And I think that you have to come up with the mechanisms because I think people will listen to this and be like, well, you know, it's easy for you to say yeah. my problems are unique. Because everyone thinks that their problems are unique mm-hmm. because they're about them. And anytime you try to like help someone or provide perspective, many times you can be running yourself into a situation where that person thinks you're trying to diminish what they're going with yeah. their problems. And so I think you do have to figure out. And so the reason why I say no is because I find that most people can't,
mm-hmm.
right? And so they're dealing with something large or small. And they show up, and it's written all over your face, mm-hmm. right? That's another good song.
Is that LaVert? You don't have to say yeah. a word.
So you see it on their face, mm-hmm. which is energy,
mm-hmm.
and now you're trying to help them, whatever it may be. But I think that the reason why people can't do it is one. I think it depends on generations, right? So I mm-hmm. think the best at doing this was probably the baby boomers,
mm-hmm.
because they just went to work, lunch pail and all, and you know the world is crumbling around them, and they just they just show up because there's
gotta
no, they, like this is you know they come from an era where they didn't have a lot of, there wasn't sick time. Mm-hmm. There wasn't, you know, being able to go to a therapist, mm-hmm. getting time off from work. Like there was any of that. So you had to show up, or, you know, you had, there's consequences financially.
I think the issue is though, the younger generation, which I think where you're going with it is like, they're less resilient, maybe a little less mentally tough, but they would argue that, you know, those baby boomers or even our generation, Gen X, like, just because you were forced to suck it up and be tough doesn't mean that that's the best thing for you.
Right.
And that's the big argument now is like, well, what's right? Right. Because I think every generation prior thinks that they're tougher, they're stronger, they're better, they're smarter, they're greater than the previous generation. And we've talked about that many times on this podcast. Like, you always think, you know, oh, the younger generation is going to ruin things because they're not doing things right. And that's not at all, I think, what we're saying. So yeah, I don't know, where are you going with this? But really quick, can I just say, you know, whatever the study was or the article where they basically took everyone's problems and they said, if we were to, like, 20 of us take all of our problems, your deepest, darkest problems. Right. So like someone's battling cancer, or someone just lost their father, someone's husband of 20 years cheated on them, right? Like all of the worst things. These people are on the verge of losing their house and filing bankruptcy, right? This person's child just died. And you put your worst problems in a pile.
And you blindfold everyone.
And you blindfold everyone. And now you have to, like, randomly draw out someone's problems. There's, you know, data that shows that people say, hell no, I don't want this problem. Right. I want my original problem. Right. Isn't that so interesting?
Right.
Like, if you're the one battling cancer, you don't want to be the one whose kid just fucking died right now. You'd rather just, I want to be the one with cancer. Don't mess with my kids. Like, I would say for sure, do not take my kid away.
Yeah.
Happy to have cancer. Like, that's a problem I don't want to switch.
Right. Yeah. Once everyone
and
gets
so that's a good perspective, though, when, if someone's listening saying, oh, yeah, stupid Janelle and Eddie, they think, oh, it's so funny to laugh at your problems. Well, your problems aren't as bad as mine. Well, I bet you wouldn't want my problems, mm-hmm. right? And so it's just something to keep in mind that that has been talked about many, many times. People want their own problems.
Yeah, and I think that that's a great example of, like, perspective and perception, right? You think about your problems, and your problems have a certain meaning to you.
Mm-hmm.
You may have been dealing with them off and on for a long amount of time. And so you've kind of gotten used to the problem,
yeah.
even though it has the same impact.
Yeah.
But to get someone else's problem.
I mean, one of our daughters right now is struggling for the last 2 months with really bad stomach issues.
Right.
I've cried over it many times in the last couple months, and we're trying to get to the bottom of it, and we haven't shared that at all. And it's hard. Mm-hmm. Like, you don't know what it is, but also in the same, like, breath, you know, last week, one of my girlfriends who didn't know that our daughter was dealing with this randomly tells me that one of her really good friends, her daughter, who's 3 years old, has brain cancer,
right.
and is starting chemotherapy. And I just start sobbing. I'm just like, not saying that that's worse or better. Like, obviously that's worse. A 3-year old baby 100%. Is awful. Like, just, I'd throw myself in the fucking fireplace if my 3-year old baby, that is so awful, right? So to have brain surgery. And then we have cousins, like extended cousins that, you know, like, I want to say last year lost their daughter. She was 8 years old to, like, a brain tumor.
Right.
And it, like, those things are fucking awful, and there's no explanation for it. And so I think that when you hear things like this, it minimizes your anything that you're freaking complaining over in most situations, unless your 3-year old daughter also has, you know, brain cancer. I think it kind of forces you to say, okay, I have to count my blessings. Like, I have to walk into work today, and I've got to put a smile on my face, and I've got to hold it together, because, yeah, it's probably not as bad as my 3-year-old daughter battling brain cancer.
What is your thought on, like, people speak to that kind of thing,
mm-hmm.
you know, I think regularly, right? Mm-hmm. People talk about other people's issues, you know, sometimes help them come to grips with their own.
Well, now I can't but say also, that because it's gaslighting.
Right.
So,
but I was going to ask you,
gaslighting.
What do you, think? What is your thought on the fact that someone will say, don't use my problems to make yours feel better?
I mean, okay, so we have my stepmom, Robin. Her sister, Kini, has daughters that have Kabuki syndrome. It's like a very, very rare disease, her twin daughters. And I remember when they were really young, they were not supposed to live, I think, past like 2 or 3 years old. And they're like 18, 19 years old now.
Right.
But they've had multiple surgeries. They've had lots of things wrong with them. And shout out to Poppy and Zaza. Wow. But I remember Kini getting really upset when, you know, she would meet someone or tell them about what her daughters are going through. And people would be in tears and they'd say, wow, I thought that I had it really bad, but you poor thing.
Right.
And I think that that's highly insulting to say to someone's face, right? I think what would be more appropriate would to say, I can't imagine how awful that must be. I'm so sorry.
Right.
That you have to go through that. Like, my heart hurts for you. And what a strong mom you are. What a strong woman you are. Like, commending them and like giving them the support that they need. And then, yeah, in private, you could be like sobbing to your partner or your husband and like, God, this woman like made me really think that I need to count my blessings. But I don't think that's something you tell someone. Like, God, yeah, thank God I met you today because your kids are really fucked up and now it makes my life feel really great. Like, that right. is the most awful thing you could say.
Right.
So I think that there's a time and a place and a way in which it can be helpful. But I don't think that you should make the other person feel like they've got it the worst. And so, God, thank God it's you and not me. Better you than me. That's awful.
I agree. And I think that that's poor social skills to yeah. say that out loud.
I
will say this. I mean, it is a natural fact that we live in a society of community
mm-hmm.
and we understand other people's problems and we understand when people go through things and we see the sadness. It is because we are in a place of community where there's we understand there's levels to pain and right. suffering, right? And so the reality is although you never want to say that to someone, the natural fact is that person's right,
right? Right?
That someone else's issues do give you perspective mm-hmm. on your own. But the key thing is understanding that it's not, you're not utilizing it to gain a better sense of your problems, but you are realizing or acknowledging the fact that if this person can handle it and my problems are not that big, I should be able to handle it. Like it's an inspiration yeah. instead of a like comparison situation.
Yeah. That but makes it's sense? Kind of the same thing. It's like, I'm comparing, you know, the wallowing in my misery that I'm doing over my situation, but then now I'm comparing it to your insurmountable challenge that you're going through. Yeah, I probably should shut up about this, right?
Right.
But again, like, some people are like, well, that's gaslighting. Don't minimize your situation. You still have the right to feel your feelings. And I think the podcast today is about, when are your feelings real?
And when
are they valid? When is it okay to let them, you know, overcome everything? And I don't know that we're qualified to give the proper answer for that. But I do think that your feelings can, if you let them and if you don't have a good relationship with managing your emotions, I think that they can be debilitating sometimes if you let them overrun everything.
I do.
And so we kind of believe that your thoughts or feelings, they're emotions that you're in charge of. Like, my brain runs the show. My feelings and my thoughts, they come up, but they're also things that I'm in control of. Right. And so I can be really sad. And there's times where I've told you, I just need to cry right now. Like, I just need to be sad for a little while. Like, I could be sad today and tomorrow I can motivate myself to move past the sadness, but I could still be sad. I just might not be crying on the floor tomorrow. Right.
Right.
But there are certain things I can think of, like losing a child. Losing you. I mean, nobody wants to lose their partner. I feel like we've been married for so long. We've been through so much. And now we just made it to be these really fun, cool, like, to this empty nester stage. I'd be mortified if I lost you after all this time because right. I feel like I just got you to myself.
Right.
So that would be really sad. And I tell my girlfriends, like, lately, like, if I lost Eddie right now, I'm not going to be okay. Like, come for me. Come check on me. So, like, you know, there are certain things that you can think of right now that, yeah, that's gonna put me back a bit.
Right.
That I probably would not be the best at managing my emotions. But also, are you supposed to be tough if you lose your spouse?
No, I don't think so. Yeah, I think that when you lose someone suddenly, regardless of their age or whatever it is, when they're close to you, it's a blow. Mm-hmm. And I think that the key thing that I want people to really realize is we're not saying not to feel the emotion. We're not saying not to go through the different stages of your emotions, especially if you're dealing with loss. Mm-hmm. What I think the big thing that I would say is you have to know when you're overvaluing your emotions and when you are, you know, really, regulating them in a way that helps you move through life, right? Yeah. Because even though it would be terrible to lose you, even though I don't know what I would do.
You'd be fine.
No, I would still have to live, mm-hmm. right? And I would still have three daughters to show up for. And so I think that, in my intellectual brain right now, not being in that situation, I would have to find some way to move through that, whether it be therapy or whatever it may mm-hmm. be, so that I can still be a functioning human being.
Well, I know lots of moms who've lost a child who have to show up for their other children. I mean, this is going to sound really weird. I don't know Vanessa Bryant, but I think of her often. Like, we liked Kobe Bryant, but I think of Vanessa Bryant often when I think of, like, oh God, she must be like really struggling with Mother's Day or Valentine's Day. You don't have a spouse to show you appreciation. You've got three daughters, or Gigi's birthday, like just not having her daughter. I don't know why I think about her often. It's just such a devastating blow to not only lose a husband, but also a daughter, and then to be left with three of them. And I often think, like, was he playing basketball all these years, like promising her that, don't worry, I'm going to be retired before you know it, and we'll have the rest of our lives together, and then I'll give you and the kids everything. And I don't know why she crosses my mind a lot, and I just, like, send good vibes her way. But I know a lot of women who are going through what she's going through, and that's awful, but they have to show up for their other kids. If you didn't have other kids, I've also met women recently who've lost a partner, and I'm like, okay, well, not that it's inappropriate when I'm saying it, but if, let's say, a couple years have gone by, I'm like, listen, I've got a grandmother who has found three loves of her life. Like, don't be in your 50s and think that you're never going to love again. I think that your partner would want you to go on and live your life. And at some point you have to, figure out how to manage your emotions enough to say, I have to live my life because this is the life I was given. And these are the circumstances that I was dealt. And I still have to find happiness, right?
Yeah. And I don't know where I saw this, and maybe we both saw this together, but there was this, I think it was a video or an article, I'm trying to remember, but they were talking about like keeping grief. Like you lose someone and you grieve, and people are like, hey, you're going to get past this grieving. And the person that was talking about this said that I don't.
It was Jordan Peterson.
Right.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you remember it exactly. I don't want to butcher the quote, but basically he said that I want to keep the grieving because that keeps that person with me.
Yeah. It was beautiful.
And I don't want to ever lose that memory. I don't ever want to lose the emotion that it gives me. And I understand that, because I can think of like moments where I think of people who lost, and you can feel the emotion kind of run within you. And I think it's okay.
But you're the kind of guy who's like, I'm not going to let myself cry. Jordan Peterson, on the other hand, is like, I like crying. If I'm getting emotional, it was Malcolm Gladwell.
That's
who it was.
Yeah.
He said, if I find myself not getting weepy or teary-eyed when I think of my father, then that's a problem. Mm-hmm. That means I've lost that emotion. I want to think of him and be happy and like overjoyed with the amount of emotion that a memory brings. And I don't ever want to stop crying.
Right.
They don't have to be sad tears. And I thought it was so beautiful. I was like, wow, imagine if you teach your kids that everybody you love, at some point, we're all going to die. And it's okay to remember them and still have emotions. And it's not a sad thing. It doesn't have to be a sad thing. It can be a memorable thing. It could be something where you're overflooded with emotions and you just want to cry, and that's okay. And we can hug, and we can still have a slice of cake on Dad's birthday, and we can still cry and celebrate at the same time, right?
Yeah.
So I think that there's space for all of it. I don't think that we should be gaslighting people into putting their emotions aside. But I also think that if you are placing too high a value on your emotions and your feelings to where, you know, it's debilitating in the workplace, it's debilitating with
different relationships.
Yeah, with a lot of things that are just holding you back, then I think that, yeah, maybe you need therapy. Maybe you need to read the Bible. Mm. Maybe you need to talk to a friend or something. And I don't think that there's like a time frame you can put on something like grief. But I do think figuring out how to better be in control of your emotions, not to gaslight the emotions or to, you know, extinguish them, but to manage through them, I think is better.
Right.
Because, you know, the person that you're talking about, you know, the conversation, sorry, can we just talk about that? You said, you know, hey, do you want to talk through some of these things, some of these issues that you have? And they said, no, I don't really want to talk through it. I don't really want to find a resolution for this. I just want to sit with these emotions.
Yeah. And
something to that effect.
Yeah. And I think it was turning into a place where we wallow, right? Mm-hmm. And I think when you wallow and you start to kind of spin into this debilitating emotional response to whatever is going on in your life, mm-hmm. I don't know if it's helpful.
Well,
right?
What was because the exact verbiage though?
Well, I would say this. Instead of the exact verbiage, I would say, like, when you were talking, and I'll get back to that, because you said something I want to make sure I really kind of spoke to, but I think that at the end of the day, we have to carry on,
mm-hmm.
right? No matter what has happened in this world, we have to carry on. And I think that because there's value in living.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that as long as that you have something to live for, which you should be always working on and focus on, then when you have loss, you deal with it, you grieve. And I think that perspective of Malcolm Gladwell, it changed how I thought about grieving.
Mm-hmm.
And it allowed me to think, okay, it's okay to keep that emotion. It's okay to have those moments where you feel that emotion, because I think it's just a sweet moment. Even though it's sad, it like reminds that you are living, right? But I think in the situation with this particular person, where they were going was going to the place where they did not want to take action. And the one thing that I have learned about your feelings and your emotions, if you want to move through them, it requires action.
Mm-hmm.
There's no, you know, managing or getting to a better place without taking swift action. And I don't want to say swift, but just taking some type of like incremental steps
mm-hmm.
to improving how you feel, because emotions are, the word emotion is just that. It is your feelings in motion. It is movement mm-hmm. through your body, through the world. And in order to actually get to a better place, you have to know how you want to feel.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that is the thing that some people in this world do not want to do. And so when I say do not want to do, I've had many conversations, and you have too, where people do not want to feel better.
Mm-hmm.
Like they want, like they may not say it out loud, but their emotions and their motivation is to stay in that place. Because for whatever reason, there's some type of benefit they're getting from how they feel.
Well, someone has said before, I'm not really looking for a solution here.
Right.
Oh, well, I'm sorry. What? That catches me off guard. You're not looking. You don't want to feel better.
Right. And let's just put this in context. So like someone loses someone. We're not saying, hey, go have another kid. That'll fix it. Right.
Oh, God.
Right.
Yeah.
No, what we're saying is like over time, as the emotion takes its course, as you start to like accept the fact that you're going to live without someone,
mm-hmm.
there has to be something you're doing to get to a better mindset or get to a better, let's say, you know, status, mm-hmm. not status, but you know what I mean? Like you're trying to get to a better place where your emotions are regulated and you're able to function at a high level in the world.
function at a different level, let's just say.
Okay.
So like you lose your kid, because that could sound really insensitive, right? You lose your kid and you want to cry on the couch for 30 days. Fine. That's great. Do that. That's right. Not great, but do that, right? Then at some point after that 30 days, you're like, okay, I got to shower. Like I got to do something. That's the next step.
Right.
Today I showered. That's the next step. But to me, that's what we're talking about.
Yeah.
You do one thing each day to get a little bit better.
Even if it's baby steps.
Even if it's baby steps. But saying, you know, I can't move on from here. I'm not looking for someone to help me like resolve this. Like I'm not trying to take another step. Like I don't know if you put a time frame on that, right? Like if someone you loved was experiencing this, they lost their child, 60 days later you check on them and they're not doing better. I think it's still really difficult to say you got to do something, like we got to move from this place. And I think that everyone puts their own time frame on grief. I think any therapist would tell you to do that.
Yeah.
So that's tricky.
It is tricky. But the reality, I think, is like you mentioned Vanessa Bryant, right? Mm-hmm. She had to, I don't know how. We don't know any of the details. We don't
have
know
other kids. Somebody else needs you.
Somebody else needs you. Mm-hmm. And so you have a reason to keep going, right? And you have a reason to move forward. And I think that when I have seen people respond or bounce back from tremendous loss, they have found something else that drives them, mm-hmm. whether it is a cause of some sort that they have now, mm-hmm. because maybe they lost someone to a disease, right? They have focused their attention and their energy at something, mm-hmm. right? So they've given themselves a new purpose, mm-hmm. so that they can get up, take that shower. They can say, hey, today I'm going to go for a walk. Today, you know, I'm going to go for a drive. You know, actually today I'm going to go to the grocery store. Like all these things that get you back into life.
But I think that's the key though. If you have nothing or no one else relying on you, right? So you don't have a dog, you don't have a horse, you don't have anything else that's relying on you to feed it, to care for it, to nurture it. You don't need to show up every day.
Right.
Then I think then that's when you can start to be, you know, maybe suicidal, like you start to kind of question, why am I even here? And so I think that that's the key, is you need to surround yourself with people or things that need you, because that's kind of the key to life, right? Is like, you want to be needed in life. And, you know, I can think of a situation, you know, someone we know that didn't find anything worth living for in life. There was no one depending on this person. And so, you know, that can only happen for so long before that person died. And that's really sad to know that I think you die of loneliness. Like no one actually needs you. So you stop having purpose. And so what are we saying? Like go find a purpose, like find someone to need you.
Well, I do think that if I were to say, you know, anyone that's going through tremendous amount of, you know, grief or sadness or depression, like I do think that having a purpose, doing something is actually extremely effective, mm-hmm. right? Coming up with a plan to impact change in something is effective. Because I do think that if you don't have a purpose, then your reason to come out of that dark place is not strong enough. Like there's nothing that's pulling you. There's nothing that's attracting you out of this dark place. And so I think you do have to have something that drives you. But I think also you have to have an understanding that what you're feeling is part of your perception. And that is a hard reality for people to really take in, because no one wants anyone to tell someone your feelings are not real. But in some sense, they're not, mm-hmm. right? They are the meaning you've made of a particular event. And the reason why we know that they're not real is because two people can go through the same thing and have totally different emotions from mm-hmm. them. And so those are all perceptions, and they're all created in our minds, in our bodies. And over time, we can shift the meaning of that death, right? And you see people who go through grief that shift, like now they redefine that person, the loss of that person, as this was a moment in my life where it shifted. It was dark at first, but it gave me a new light. It gave me a new purpose. It gave me something to strive for.
Well, I find that really remarkable that people can go through like an accident or something, lose their limbs, and then they wind up learning how to, you know, race in the paraplegic Olympics or something. Like, I find that so inspiring. Whereas things like that happen to someone else and they become suicidal, right? And so I think that for me, inspiration, you know, turns into something that motivates me. So I also gravitate towards other people's stories, though. Like, I love seeing someone win. And I believe, based on my experiences and what I know to be true about humans, is that if someone else can turn shit into sugar, I damn sure can do that too. And so I just have this belief in myself that if I see someone else like try on a different perspective, then I can try that on too. And so I think that seems to work for me. Another thing that works for me, I remember there was this time like early when we started the bakery. I want to say it was like right around the time where like our partnership was like crumbling. Fabiola left the bakery. I was really sad about that. Like, financially, we were struggling. I think I had an employee issue, something. One of the girls was probably acting up. It was like a shit storm. And I just remember like putting in my on Facebook or something, I just want to help someone. Like, I'm having a rough week and I just want to do something for someone else. Does anyone know of someone in need? I just want to do something good. And my inbox got flooded with a bunch of things. And I remember my friend Amy Celesi said, there's this couple that I know. I don't know how she knew them, but their 2-year-old daughter had a brain tumor and was in the hospital. I think it was cancer. And I was just sobbing. And I was like, okay, I'm going to do something for this family. They were like a young couple. And I randomly, anonymously went and dropped something. I played Ding Dong Ditch and did something. And I just remember sobbing in my car, watching them come outside and pick up this box of cupcakes that I had left for them. And it made me feel better. Like, just to know that I did something for someone else shifted away from, you know, the shitstorm that I was in,
right,
to know that they were in a much bigger shitstorm and that I could bring them an ounce of happiness just made me feel so much better.
And I mean, and that is an
effective.
So
when you say, you know, wrap yourself into something charitable, I think that that is probably my go-to, is just doing something for someone else in need.
Yeah. And I think that that's such an effective way to do it, because you think about the reality of emotions and how we feel. It is a self-centered act, right? Yeah. We're thinking about ourselves. Even when people like, or we lose someone, it is about us. It is about how much we're going to miss them. And I often think about like, what is this person that died wants me to do right now?
Mm-hmm.
Like, how do I make it about them? And so it's another way of like moving it from you to someone else and taking action. And I think that that's a really great thing to do. I think about like times where I get this notion inside of me that says, give this guy $20,
mm-hmm,
right? That's on the street. And I just follow it and I do it. And the feeling of gratitude and, you know, the emotion that comes from that is powerful,
mm-hmm,
right? Because I listen to my heart. You know, some people say I listen to God, whatever it may be for you, but you did an act you don't want recognition from. The recognition is what you got in the car, that feeling of you did something special for, mm-hmm, someone, and you can imagine everything they're going through for them to get this small surprise was probably something that really changed their evening.
Yeah.
Right. And so I think that those are things that you can take action and really change.
I love when, you know, like you're with someone, like I've been with family members. We live in Los Angeles. There's homeless people all over. And every now and then we'll roll down a window and give somebody some money. And I love when you're with a family member that's not from LA and they're like, what if that guy goes and gets drunk with that? I'm like, I don't care. Like, that's not, it doesn't matter what his intentions are. What matters is I was generous with my heart, and whatever he does with it, I hope impacts his life in a positive way.
Right.
And if that means he's going to go get drunk and it'll subside his emotions and feelings temporarily, then oh well.
Like, right.
It's not about what he does with it. It's about how it made me feel, and he needed the money and I was able to give it to him. So that's always funny. But I don't know. I think this was just a bit of a conversation that, you know, we were having that we wanted to kind of share with you. So there's not like a 10-step process to this. It's more just like, these are the conversations we have on our sofa about, like, you know, different people that we interact with that say things that make us think, that make us talk about them on the sofa, not in a negative way, but just like, huh, this person said this today. They said they didn't want help managing their emotions. Instead, they wanted to just be sad.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, how do you feel about that? Well, okay. I'm trying to think of a time where I just felt like being sad. Did I want to be sad for a long time? Did, like, what was the context, right?
Right.
And I don't know. I recently, there was someone I talked to and they were just, they kept saying, I just can't get over this. I just can't. I can't, like, I can't get over this. And I was like, okay, let me stop you. Do you want to get over this? Right. Or are you, like, you're saying you can't, but that's not true. You simply don't want to, because you weren't physically harmed. You weren't, you know, assaulted in any way. There's actually no physical damage. You don't want to move on from this. That's a different thing.
Yeah. And you made me think about something. Like, I remember years ago when we worked for Circuit, and mm-hmm. I just was like not feeling great. Uh-huh. Right. And I remember, like, our boss at that time, you know, just, you know, talking to me, and I just felt like I had this, you know, crappy store. Mm-hmm. I was in the, you know, it was,
oh, you were so upset about it.
I was in middle of Pomona, which is like, I did the research, it was under the poverty line.
Yeah.
And every time someone would talk to me about, like, and I think in their way, they were trying to get me to shift my perspective. Mm-hmm. I didn't want to hear it.
Yeah.
And when I think back at it now with this mind, mm-hmm. And I think that that was the case for this person. And I think I hear this a lot. Mm-hmm. When you're going through something and you do not necessarily want responsibility or control of your emotion, you mm-hmm. think they're outside of your control. The last thing is you want someone to do is to quickly tell you, well, all you need to do is step one, step two, step right. three to get through it. Because what it makes you feel like is, well, I am smart. Mm-hmm. I should be able to like figure this out. The last thing I want you to do is to show me how stupid I am by mm-hmm. telling me how to get through this. And so mm-hmm. instead of actually listening and going with it, mm-hmm. I reject it mm-hmm. because my ego is now saying, yeah. I don't want the help. I don't mm-hmm. want that kind of help because you're making me feel like I could have solved this a long time ago
yeah.
instead of dealing with it, when the reality is you could have solved it, right? Or you could have came up with some type of plan and say, hey, this is how I'm going to work my way through this, right. this moment.
Can I just say something real quick before you go on? When people say, you're making me feel like I'm stupid, I fucking hate that. I'm not making you feel like anything. If you feel like I'm making you feel like you're stupid, maybe you're stupid. Like, you know, I always feel that way. I'm not making you feel stupid.
Right.
You're feeling stupid because of something I'm saying, and that's a you problem.
Right.
So if I'm saying, hey, you should just try XYZ, and you're telling me that that makes you feel stupid, then you feel stupid. That's a you problem.
Right.
So maybe it is just that, right?
Like, well, it is
such a simple answer. And now you're upset and you think I'm trying to make you feel stupid.
Well, I think that's when you have people who say, I wasn't looking for a solution. I was looking for someone to right. listen, because I don't want to not only feel sad about my situation, but on top of that, the last thing I need is you to, like, simplify right. my situation and give me a solution. And, you know, and I think that I get an element of that. But then at the same time, when you, someone is trying to help you and they're trying to offer suggestions, they're just trying to help you with steps to move through whatever you're going through. It's not going to remove the emotion, but doing the steps. If I said, hey, you know what? If you're feeling this, you should do something for someone else. And you're like, that's not going to solve my problem. Mm-hmm. Right. But it will, it will help you. It would be a step in the right direction. But I do think that, like, sometimes people just don't want to hear it.
Yeah. Also, I mean, we've said this before, but my stepmom, Robin, she says, well, what happened and what did you make it mean?
Right.
What happened in that situation was you got a shitty store. You made it mean that, oh, my God, this is so dumb. I'm never going to be able to win here.
It came, like, became a complete victim.
Right.
Right. I was like.
So you could never win.
I felt victimized by this situation.
You could never win because you were a victim.
Right.
And I don't.
And that's a key thing.
Right. You never got to. You said, well, what you did, I say something to you to change that or.
No. Well, I think what you said is what I wanted to feel like. You can't be a victim and the victor at the same time. So yeah. Like,
so do you want to win or do you want to be the victim? Right. That's my issue with a lot of conversations that we have with like friends and family and stuff. It's like, okay, well, you can be right or you can do something to make it right. What do you want to do? You can be right, be the victim, or we can do something to make you right. You could be the victor.
So that's going to go over people's head. Like we have to break that down. When you say you could be right, what comes to mind, you can tell me if this is aligns, but if I feel like I'm a victim,
mm-hmm. then
I can add up all the things.
Mm-hmm. You are right. You have all the data.
I have all mm-hmm. the data. I have all the situations. Mm-hmm. I have all the scenarios from my perception that shows that I am a victim.
And nothing that I say is going to combat that if you believe that. You're right.
Right.
So you can be right and you reserve the right to be right. But you can also try to get it right.
Right. Because so, being right doesn't necessarily mean right. that you're going to get it. You're going to get it right.
Right. So trying to get it right,
right
means like, you're right. You're a victim. Hey, this is a shitty store, whatever. Right. But let's try to get it right. And that would mean we have to try on something different. So, hey, it's a shitty store, but what if we considered XYZ? Could that also work? It could. Well, let's try it. What if we did this, this, and this? What if you reached out to da-da-da-da, right? So there are things you can do to make it a little more right. But right. those would be the things that are opposite of you being the victim.
Right. And that's the key. That's so important.
But people why don't want to work that damn hard.
Well, they don't want to work that hard because the hard thing to do.
Be right.
Yeah. The hard thing to do is to feel the pain of being wrong. And the feeling the pain of being. And what I mean by that is there's a sense of feeling wrong by having the emotion and then someone telling you a different version or a different perspective you can have. You may reject it because it makes you feel wrong. Like, I was wrong to feel this way.
I think it's that, just you want to be validated.
Well, you want to be validated. 100% mm-hmm. you want to be validated. But also, you want to be validated, but you also, people want to be smart, mm-hmm. right? And so it makes me feel better and it makes me feel legitimate or validated if someone says, yeah, you are in a really, yeah, you are a victim.
Yeah, but if your boss would have said, hey, here's the thing. I put you in a shitty store because I believe that you're the right person to turn this around. Here's how you shine as a superstar right. in this company.
Right.
You're the only person that can make this work. So I need you to tap into your creativity. I need you to be the one to rally up this team. I need you to be the one to infuse some enthusiasm. I need you. That is totally different. Same situation.
100%.
Same store. But it's in the delivery, right? And it's what you believe to be true. So you're either the victim or you're going to be the one that says, fuck that. I'm always down for a right. challenge.
Because both stories are
completely right.
Both stories live on their own. Mm-hmm. And you don't always get the full story. You don't always get the boss that's going to tell you that. Mm-hmm. But that story still exists. That narrative is yeah. still there that you can tap into. It's up to you to shift it into a more...
Yeah.
profitable, fruitful perspective yep. that allows you to be successful. And that's the thing I think a lot of people that I've noticed have an issue with, that I think that we work really hard to try to do that, but it's not easy, is to shift to the perspective that is the most sensible, reasonable, but also the most profitable at the end. Because when you do that, now all of a sudden, this situation that was hard, ugly, depressing is now this newfound opportunity.
Yep.
And nothing's changed.
Yep. Okay, let's wrap this up because I have an idea for the next episode.
Okay.
And it's also about managing your emotions, but in a really positive and helpful way.
Okay.
So I hope this episode served you. This was more of a conversation on right. how we kind of just talk through emotions. Like, are you going to be the victim or the victor? Hopefully you stuck around this long, but we'll see you guys in the next episode because I think it's going to be helpful. And here's a little hint. Tom Brady.
Oh.
Yeah.
Push through.
Okay, bye.
Thank you for listening to the Push Podcast. Hey, we want to hear from you. So if you have a question or there's a particular topic that you want us to tackle and you want us to help you push through, you got to do something for us. You got to go to Apple Podcasts and you got to leave a rating and a review. And in that review, go ahead and leave that question with your Instagram handle so that we can shout you out when we actually answer the question. And we'll talk about that on the podcast and make sure that, hey, this particular podcast is made for you. So leave a rating, leave a review, leave your handle, and until next time, push through.